Hello, and welcome to my podcast. Today, we will explore how we can use the political economy theory of interstate rivalry and competition to look at the exodus of Huguenots from France and their welcoming in different Holy Roman states in the late 17th century. For those of you who are not so familiar with the subject, let me give you some historical context before I explain the question we are going to explore today. Protestantism was made illegal in France by the Edict of Fontainebleau, which was issued by Louis XIV in 1685. As a result, 200,000 French Calvinist Protestants, referred to as the Huguenots, fled the country. Many were endowed with high human capital, meaning that they had economically productive knowledge. They were often well-educated, skilled artisans, for example. To welcome these refugees, many territorial rulers of states within the Holy Roman Empire issued edicts containing so-called privileges that outlined the rights of Huguenot refugees. Some were policies for specific cities, others referred to entire states. These privileges will be the focus of my podcast, specifically whether they are an example of interstate rivalry and competition for human capital. I'm going to hypothesize that yes, states were in a process of competition for the human capital of Huguenots, and their means of competing were the privileges they could offer to them. To test this, we will explore some of the edicts, outlining the religious privileges granted to Huguenots by the rulers and their development over time. To start, I will discuss existing literature before diving into our primary sources and the analysis of those primary sources. Let's get right into it. Previous literature on the privileges has debated the extent to which they were economical and economically motivated. Dürrlemeyer, for example, cites the diverse economic needs of states as the main reason for the difference in the rights granted to Huguenots between different Holy Roman polities. Jörg Wenzel, on the other hand, questions whether these expensive policies of settling Huguenots were economical at all for princes. He argues that the effect has been overstated. Literature on interstate competition for human capital has debated whether policy was used with the intention and effect of attracting human capital in early modern Europe. De Maistre, for instance, looks at the granting of burgerships as a possible way in which cities competed for human capital. He finds that it was mostly used to replenish declining guilds and to keep existing human capital within cities. Piano and Salter, on the other hand, construct a model to show that there was a market for governance in Europe. Merchants as well as peasants based their immigration decision in part on the governance bundles provided to them by different polities. Thus, the interstate rivalry and competition framework would predict that the privileges became more generous over time as more of them were issued by different states. As the competition for human capital of Huguenots increased, their bargaining power and scarcity grew. They could now choose the best of a large variety of offers, ceteris paribus, of course. Let's now look at the religious privileges granted by rulers in their respective edicts in a chronological order and see whether the above prediction works. So, let me take you back to the Holy Roman courts of the early modern period and let's find out. The Edict of Kassel, issued by Karl of Hesse-Kassel on the 14th of April 1685.
If they do not speak German, a church shall be built for them at their expense, and pious, God-fearing preachers and schoolmasters shall teach there in their language.
The Edict of Potsdam, issued by Frederick William, Elector of Brandenburg and Duke of Prussia, on the 29th of October 1685.
In every town, we want to have a special preacher for our French comrades in faith, and also assign a convenient place where they can exercise their reformed faith in French languages, and the service with the same customs and ceremonies shall be held as it has been customary until now with the Protestant reformed churches in France.
The declarations of the privileges of Hameln, issued by Duke Ernst August from Braunschweig-Lüneburg on the 1st of August 1690.
We want to provide them with the timber for such construction, but that they have it fetched from the forest at their expense. The same exemptions for the collegium as for the new church to be built are mentioned above, or even promised and granted.
From those texts and primary sources, we can see that whereas the first edicts of Kassel and Potsdam allowed only for free practice of religion, later edicts such as the privilege of Hameln were more generous in terms of religious rights, even subsidizing the construction of new churches and schools. Another example of a later edict was the concession of Karlshafen, which built on the Edict of Kassel, issued by the same ruler, by offering more judicial independence, for example. Before we go into the conclusions from these findings, let's look at political actors at the time and see how they looked at the issue to see whether competition for human capital was actively considered. A couple of years after the privileges were issued in Brandenburg, the Chamberlain of Pölnitz, who served at the court of Brandenburg, reflected on the impact of the Huguenot refugees on the economy and the city of Berlin.
We have them to thank for our manufactories, and they gave us the first idea of trade, which we did not know before. They introduced abundance and prosperity and made the city one of the most beautiful in Europe. Through them, the taste for the arts and sciences came to us. They tempered our rough manners. They put us in a position to compare ourselves with the most enlightened nations, so that if our fathers have shown them good, we have been sufficiently rewarded for it.
Pölnitz clearly sees a return to the investment of granting these privileges to Huguenot refugees. He also makes this all about human capital. The knowledge the Huguenots brought and the different benefits Berlin was able to get from them, such as promotion of the arts and sciences, even going as far as crediting an improvement in manners to them. So what do these sources show us in relation to our hypothesis that the privileges were in part driven by competition for human capital? As the theory would predict, the privileges became more generous over time, with the last few subsidizing the construction of churches and religious schools. The extract from Pölnitz's memoir also show that political actors at the time clearly understood the concept of attracting human capital and were motivated by it and understood the benefits it could bring to a city such as Berlin. This suggests that interstate competition for human capital could be a good framework to use when looking at the Huguenot privileges. The sources also indicate that, contrary to Dörlemeyer's suggestions, the privileges were often not entirely determined by a state's economic needs, but became more generous over time, possibly driven by the competition for human capital. This could also explain why the purely economic outcomes were not as positive for rulers, a fact that, as mentioned, Jörg Wenzel observes. But there are not enough edicts, unfortunately, and the refugee stream was not sustained enough for us to view the development of edicts by different princes over a longer time. So a competitive process and dynamic is difficult to observe. Another caveat is that other factors could have caused the increase in generosity. As Dörlemeyer shows, for example, the first privileges, such as the Edict of Potsdam and Kassel, were drafted as general invitations, whereas the following privileges were more specifically tailored to a settlement, offering specific local amenities and often were a product of negotiations with Huguenot leaders. To fully understand the importance of competition, the edicts themselves are probably not enough. More correspondence surrounding the issuing of these privileges needs to be analyzed systematically to find out. I hope you found this interesting and can take away that political economy and competition are useful tools through which to view history. Analyzing primary sources through this framework can help us understand not only the motivations of political actors, but also the specific features and chronological development of early modern policy. Thanks for listening.